Goldman Sachs makes more money.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. There must be a rainbow that ends on West Street in Lower Manhattan because there's a giant pot of gold at Goldman Sachs headquarters that continues to reap rewards. The investment giant reported this morning it earned $3.3 billion in the first quarter. That's twice what it made in the same period last year. Now, last week, the Securities and Exchange Commission charged the investment giant in a civil fraud case. Robin Farzad is a senior writer for Business Week. He's at a business conference in Miami. Now, you used to work for Goldman, right?
I did, back in the day.
Back in the day. When was back in the day?
Between 98 and 2000. Ancient history, was a different company.
Tell me why it was a different company back then.
I mean, the jig back then was the tech stock boom and equity underwriting, and it's since become much more of an eat-what-you-can-kill firm and, you know, hedge fund-oriented and structured finance like these CDOs.
You know, Goldman is getting beaten up in the not only in the press, but, I mean, it just seems like a lot of people are looking at Goldman with these daggering eyes and saying, you know, oh, my gosh, they're, you know, partly responsible for what's going on or for what's wrong with Wall Street, things like that. How do they keep making money?
They have a black box, that's what it's called. I mean, they have a machine internally that information comes in from hedge fund clients, and they act on these trades, and they're very adept at making money on their own house account. And we just don't see that at the Merrill Lynch's and Morgan Stanley's of the world that are much more traditional brokerage firms.
So, Robin, do you think the charges against Goldman will force hedge fund managers to flee?
Hedge fund managers, I mean, let's not forget, are very secretive people. They do not like to be recognized in the street, especially as the entire alternative investment universe is already being vilified en masse. So I believe that they're going to think twice about at least, you know, parking all their chips at Goldman. I believe that they're going to be less inclined to put their money with the firm that I think at this point at least is the most radioactive.
Did the damage to the reputation start with these charges that came down last week?
No, the reputation was hit. Look, it hit a tripwire. They were in Rolling Stone magazine, for crying out loud. Goldman came out very, very strong. It had its most profitable year ever. It's an embarrassment of riches. It's making Goldman Sachs executives cringe. It's like, gosh, how are we going to explain our way out of this?
Robin Farzad, a senior writer for Business Week. He's with us from Miami. Robin, thanks.
My pleasure. Thank you.
More flights are taking off in Europe this morning as the cloud of volcanic ash from Iceland becomes less of a threat. But now the question of who pays looms on the horizon. From London, Marketplace European correspondent Stephen Beard reports.
The skies are now open over Scotland, Belgium, the Netherlands and Sweden. Other countries like France and Germany are planning a phased reopening later today. But the London airports remain closed. Another cloud of ash is said to be headed towards England. The cost to the airlines has been stratospheric, $1.5 billion, according to Giovanni Bisignani, head of the main aviation trade body. He claims that closing a wide swathe of North European airspace was an overreaction, based purely on computer modelling.
Europe was using a theoretical mathematical approach that is not what we need. We needed some tests. We needed some test flights, go in the atmosphere, assess the level of ashes and take decisions.
11 British airlines have now demanded compensation from the UK government. Lawyers forecast a raft of lawsuits from airlines and companies that depend on air travel to move their goods. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Planes going up, stock prices going up too. Let's check the numbers. European shares are higher at the moment, 1% or more for the markets there. Asian shares rebounded today as well. The Hang Seng up about 1%. Wall Street looks to capitalize on gains made yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added 73 points to close at 11,092. General Motors CEO Ed Whitaker will announce tomorrow the automaker is going to pay back $4.7 billion that it still owes. But taxpayers, i.e. stock owners, will still own 60% of the company, even after the payback.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing, online surveys, and event marketing. ConstantContact.com. by Mass Mutual, offering a financial literacy program to help families navigate their finances. Details at massmutual.com/familyfinances. And by Citrix, offering GoToMyPC, allowing users to work from anywhere via the web. More at gotomypc.com/market.
Japanese car maker Nissan starts taking orders today for its all-new electric vehicle called the Leaf. It could be the beginning of a new era for plug-ins, but as Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports, there could still be a few roadblocks.
The Nissan Leaf doesn't look like some space-age vision of the future. Philip Reed is an editor at the car buying list, Edmunds.com. He says it looks like any small four-door car.
It's the first time that we've been offered a vehicle which could fit into the practicality of the average American family.
He says the Leaf is the first electric car that's big enough and cheap enough to be used by a family. It'll end up costing a little more than $20,000, so it can compete against other compact cars like the Honda Civic. But it could still take a while before there's a Leaf in every driveway. Kelly Sims Gallagher is a professor of energy and environmental policy at Tufts University. She says Nissan's up against two big challenges.
Do we have the appropriate infrastructure for charging and grid? And are consumers willing to make these changes in their behavior?
The Leaf can only drive 100 miles before it needs to be recharged, so drivers will have to figure out where they can plug in. Gallagher says cars like the Leaf could also put too much strain on old electricity grids. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
And finally, Australian college professor Steve Keane is now on a 140-mile trek to the top of that country's highest peak, Mount Kosciuszko. At the height of the financial crisis, Keane predicted house prices down under would fall as much as 40%. But an interest rate strategist said a collapse would never happen, and they bet on it. Home prices fell, but not to levels seen here in the U.S. and in Britain. By the way, Professor Keane's not only climbing the mountain, he's wearing a T-shirt that says, "I was hopelessly wrong on house prices." That'll teach him. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.